We think it's the banning of free speech, the First Amendment protects material, presumptively.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Ari Shaffir's Skeptic Tank number 27. My guest today is Mr. Joe Rogan. He and I went to, is that the right grammar? Maybe. We went to Washington, D.C. together to, he was hosting a UFC and I was watching a UFC. And we did a comedy show the night before at the Verizon. I don't know where it was. But on the way back, we decided to record a podcast while we were in the plane so we could piss off the other first class passengers. It was really great. So, as usual with Joe, I have a tough time corralling him into a single topic. But we did for a little while. We talked about, I guess mostly we talked about comedy, but we talked about censorship in general, what that means. And then it just kind of just meandered to a regular conversation. But it was still fun. So, sit back, everybody, relax, and enjoy Ari Shaffir's Skeptic Tank number 27. Let's call it censorship with Mr. Joe Rogan. You can't stand to see a brother get as rich as you. This is the 90s and we're coming on strong, saying things and doing things that you're saying's wrong. Rising up, because on election day, we'll see who's banned in the USA. Welcome to the Skeptic Tank, Ari Shaffir's Skeptic Tank. I'm here on an airplane, on a DCA. I'm making that up. I don't know what kind of plane it is.
I think it's a 737.
Oh, a 737 from Washington, D.C. to Los Angeles, California with my friend and colleague, Mr. Joe Rogan.
Hello, Ari.
How are you?
Podcast on a plane.
Yeah.
I love it.
It's so easy.
It's way better than the way I've been doing it, or we did it before with an iPhone. It sounds kind of funky.
And we're almost kissing. We had to be so close to it.
A little bit. I didn't want to bring that up.
Not that would have been bad, but you know, whatever. We just didn't want to right then. We're gonna try to go. You hate doing topics.
We can do a topic.
Let's just talk about this in general. Censorship in general. Just the idea of somebody fucking telling you what to do or what not to do. I hate it. I don't know if you do.
Of course. You know, if you're a comic, the only way you become a comic is somewhere along the line you said something you shouldn't have said and somebody laughed. You know, and that's what it's all about. I mean, the 90% more of what you say on stage and what I say on stage, there's many, 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 many places where it's absolutely inappropriate and people would be upset at you.
Yeah.
I mean, could you imagine if you were ever in some formal meeting about anything important and you told the exploding vagina story, you know? You said, well, I like women when they're 20 because their vaginas are awesome. You know, like people would fucking
people
freak
like,
out.
That's just not funny. I'm like, well, not in the right context.
Yeah, you're like, well, you're wrong because I've got a recording here.
That was the first time, actually, I remembered not doing well with a joke and having this freedom. It was this anorexic joke. I wrote it in college, actually. I did it before I was a stand-up, and I brought it in, but I was like, how do you kill an anorexic person? If you tell her, like, hey, if you lost, like, 5 more pounds, you'd be beautiful. And somebody, I was in the belly room with, like, 5 people one day, and the joke got laughs. It consistently got laughs. You know, I was happy with it. And then somebody didn't get laughs that night, and this girl was like, that's just not funny. And I'm like, well, I mean, I know from observation that you're just wrong. But I agree with you, maybe. No one laughed today, so something I did was off, but the joke is untouchable. My delivery might have been off, or this crowd might have been off, but that joke is beyond reproach.
By the way, the captain is just talking. This is the worst sound system
for
communicating. He could be telling us there's UFOs out the side of the building.
If you look on your left side, you'll see a flying object. They waved at us.
They're looking at us right now. The stewardesses are looking at us like maybe we're doing something that we shouldn't be doing.
They're deciding?
Yeah, they're trying to decide. Well, it's, you know, when someone says that it's not funny, they are right. It's not funny to them.
To them.
You know, I mean, it's not funny. And sometimes it's just not funny at that moment. And even you're not laughing because you've heard it 100 times, so you know it's coming. And these 5 people, you know, they're sensitive. They're right. At that moment, it's not funny. But shit, man, that doesn't mean anything.
There are times, I remember in my acting class, where I'll see some scene or something, and it just strikes me right, and I just start laughing.
Because
they do it well, you know, they're leading the moment, and I'm like, oh, I see this moment, that girl's tooling that guy around.
Yeah.
And I'll just laugh, and people are like, what are you laughing? I'm like, I don't know, it's funny.
you know, I took my oldest daughter to Twilight. You know, she's into the Twilight movies.
Oh, really?
And,
nice.
And it was so... I don't know which one it was, the second one, or I think it was the second one. And it was fucking horrendous. There was some horrendous scenes in there where I was biting, but laughing and biting my hand, and then I start goofing on them. Well, to her, it wasn't funny at all. To me, it was hilarious.
Jacob just lost his love, Dad.
Yeah. I was like, oh, Christ.
That's not cool.
No, he didn't say that. Get out of there, you sparkly freak. You know, I'm like...
I always hated the idea of Twilight because I'm like, it's vampires versus werewolves, and it's some love story.
And by the way, no one dies.
No one dies?
No one dies.
And they're fighting over a six.
Yeah. People die, like, sort of peripherally on the news. They heard someone got
None
killed.
None of the main characters die?
No, you don't see anybody die. No. It's terrible. The werewolves are...
Do they say they're going to kill each other at least?
Yeah. They threaten. They gnash teeth. They look at each other. But it's, like, really a girl's version, a young girl's version of what werewolves and vampires. They're attracted to these blood-sucking freaks that live forever. You know,
and in high school, if some guy was mad, they'd beat you up. But that'd be the worst of it. They go, "Well, you want some?"
Well, it's also kind of cool.
Rebecca?
He can protect you because he's a werewolf or a vampire.
People call that female porn.
Lance's
girlfriend Ashley used to call that female porn.
It is. There's something. I mean, haven't you ever been to the bookstore and you see those books that you go, "Who the fuck are these for?"
Mm-hmm.
Those with the guy
fantasy
with the long hair, Fabio looking hair.
In the wind.
Yeah, with his chest hair
broken open.
Yeah.
This tan at the beach.
And there's a girl who's just longingly looking at him, like, who's that novel for? Well, it's
who
a woman who needs love in her life, and she's not getting it. Women need a certain amount of romance. You know, it sounds gross, but they want to be courted because they want to know that their eggs are special. They want to know that their genetics are special. So they want someone who adores them. So it appeals to them. See, women aren't just I shouldn't say women in general, but a lot of women aren't happy with just someone who really loves them and cares for them. They want to be adored. They want to be worshipped.
Yeah.
They really do. And it's because of their eggs. They want... This is a fight for the eggs. It's a genetic
battle.
So
people read those, and they read about somebody crossing an ocean and getting off the ship. They go, "Maria, take me in your arms." They see that, and they're just like, "Oh, it's time to touch that clit.
Yeah, it's time perfect. To... perfect. Yes. Diggy, 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 diggy." Yeah, they love it. It's funny, man. It's just... They have a completely different set of ideals than us, which is why those type of women could never understand hand jobs, could never understand... going to a place and just getting jerked off, you know, or being
back
on a
alley
date
behind a dumpster photo.
Yeah, and a girl doesn't want to have sex, and you're like, "Oh God, will you just touch it with your hand?" "No, I won't touch it with my hand. This is not like my books. This is not like the man
they
with
never
the-
in the books. They never say just kiss it, kiss it.
Yeah, then
just touch it with your hand.
That guy never says, "Just let me titty fuck you." The guy with the flowing locks never just tries to titty fuck you.
We knew a baseball player. Peripherally, we knew him like a little bit, and I mentioned him that he got us on the field at Dodger Stadium once.
Did he what? On the
that
field?
He got us on the field like,
okay.
After the game. We walked down there. It's kind of cool. And I mentioned it to my friend Avi, and he's like, "I know that name from somewhere." I'm like, "Oh, he's a Major League Baseball player." He goes, "No, oh, I know what it is. He was hooking up with a friend of mine and said, 'I'm married, so I can't fuck you, but I could just come on your tits.'"
He said, "I'm married, I can't fuck you, but I'll just come on your tits."
Yeah, that was his answer.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, and she went for it.
She went for it?
Yeah.
Did they make out? Or did
they kissed a little while, I guess.
Oh, okay.
Wasn't there, so I'm just...
He just beat one off on her tits.
Yeah, it's like, you know, this isn't cheating.
Pretty hot. I guess it's sort of cheating, though.
Sort of.
Because you wouldn't do it if your wife was there.
No. That's why I think all those things are cheating.
Yeah, you got to think about that. Think about that. And then again, like we were discussing yesterday... When something like that happens, then you got some crazy freak who has some story about you.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you're a Major League Baseball player.
Person,
yeah.
That person who was willing to fuck you after you met them.
Yeah.
You're trusting them to be cool.
Yeah, and not talk about it. Or talk about it, and hopefully in a small circle,
just tell a
couple
of friends.
It doesn't get back around to your mom or your wife.
Yeah. Hopefully somebody's running a podcast where they know about it years later and doesn't mention the guy's name.
Well, lucky that you're a nice guy, because if you were some douchebag podcast fella...
Or semi-thoughtful. You know, by the way, just talking about people telling you what not to do and stuff. I remember one of the first things that really helped me with stand-up. It was in Rhode Island. You remember that trip we took? We did Boston. Either it was the Wilbur or was the old Comedy Connection.
Okay,
and then we drove and did two road gigs. We did Chicopee.
Yeah.
Which is one of the worst places
Terrible.
Of all time. If you live there, kill yourself. I don't know. I don't advise this for many people, but kill yourself. Some old lady showed us her boobs.
Yeah.
Remember that? As we were driving away, it was so gross. And like, and she was probably like 48, and she goes, "You want to see my tits, don't you?" And we were like, "No, ma'am. No, we don't." Tate was there too, I think. We're like, "We definitely don't." She goes, "Here you go." And they were like saggy.
They were monstrous. Yeah, and then we went to Rhode Island,
but
right?
We were in Rhode Island. This is what it was. We were getting out of the car and walking to this like tent, this giant tent, and it was like a 5-minute walk. And this guy who runs it says, he was saying, he's like, "Oh, thank you very much for coming." And we were just briskly walking towards it. And he was mentioning stuff, and you weren't really paying attention. And he goes, "You know, and it's kind of an older crowd, so if you want to, like, tone it down a little bit." And you, without breaking stride or even barely looking at him, you just go, "No," and just keep walking.
Yeah.
And I was like, "Oh, you can do that? You can not even take it into account at all?"
Yes.
Cleaned it up a little bit, and I was off. I got scared.
Well, at that point, you know, it was already my crowd.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
When I first started doing stand-up, I would have probably gotten scared and tried to clean it up a little, but after you've been doing stand-up for a certain amount of years, you got to assume that the majority of the people that are coming to the show are coming to see you because they like what you do. So if they like what you do, that's what you got to give them.
Yeah.
You know, if I toned it down for the 10 or 20 people that hadn't seen me and would have been offended, that would have wrecked it for the, you know, 390 others.
And why would you make changes for those few people who aren't going to like you?
Yeah, fuck them. Either they go along with it. I know that if you bring them the real shit, if there's 400 people there and there's going to be 10 that are going to be ruthlessly offended, brutally offended, those 10, you know, they're not there for you, man.
Also, if you tone it down, they'll be mildly offended.
Yeah.
You can't really tone it down enough.
Yeah. I mean, how much can, especially with our acts,
you
know, with your act or my act, our acts are fucking offensive.
You know, people ask me, like, "Can you do a clean gig?" I'm always like, "Oh, no, I can recommend people for you. I just can't do it."
I always say,
but they're like, "Can you clean it up a little?" I'm like, show me where.
Yeah, I'll give it to you on paper, and you can bring it back
show
to me.
Show me where this blowjob bit can be cleaner. Well,
I went through something like that with Comedy Central before I ever did a special on there.
Really?
We were talking about me trying to. We completely gave up. Yeah, because they were just, it was ridiculous, you know, when you try to tone it down for TV.
Yeah.
And eventually what I wound up doing is doing an uncensored set, and then what they did is Spike TV aired it late at night, uncensored, and then they beeped it out earlier in the night, and then Comedy Central did the exact same thing.
Yeah.
They just accepted
it. Renazisi and I were talking about this. He was like, "Should I go Comedy Central or Showtime for a special?" And I'm like, "Dude, your act is not that far off from Comedy Central."
Yeah, I agree.
A lot of your fucks are, "I fucking went to the store," which aren't necessary at all. It's like, and a couple bits, you leave those out of the special because more people will see it on Comedy Central.
Yeah, and those get beeped out without a problem anyway. Yeah. It's those kind of fuckings are no problem. The, you know, the fuck stories are the real problems. You know,
how much TV have you done? Was that always a problem for you?
It's always a problem. Yeah. Well, the good thing is that I was fairly prolific, so I always had a certain amount of material just sort of accidentally that was clean.
Yeah.
And it was just how to piece all that accidentally clean material together. But it was all sexual or it had innuendo.
I'm sure you could do it. Like, if it was like 5 to 7,
oh, yeah,
you could probably pick a bit that was like, all right, that one I can do.
I could probably do an hour clean if I wanted to, but, I mean, why would I do that?
Yeah.
It's stupid. I think the idea behind it is dumb. And when I was coming up, it was really worshipped. It was like everybody wanted to do The Tonight Show. Because that's what happened with, when I was starting out in Boston, what happened with Stephen Wright, was Stephen Wright got on TV, got on The Tonight Show.
Was he a big
Letterman
Boston guy?
Yeah.
And so
he got on that, and then that propelled him into superstardom. Then he did HBO and all this different stuff. But everybody was like, you got to be clean. When you're
like,
clean,
okay,
you can make it.
We got to do this.
Yeah. So that was what everybody wanted. Everybody wanted clean material, and I never understood that because it was like, my favorite comedians were Pryor and Dice Clay and Kinison, but everyone was telling you can't be those guys. I was like, well, so at one point in time, they had to be those guys. And they were saying, well, you have to be something different first, and then once you become a successful comedian, then you can become those guys. I'm like, well, that's the dumbest shit I've ever heard in my life. And then somewhere along the line, I realized I was taking advice from people who were mildly successful on a regional basis, and we're never going to really make it in the world of stand-up comedy. The real national world.
They just weren't.
They didn't
do
have
it.
A unique voice.
And you sort of like, oh, you're ahead of me, but you're not where I want to be.
Yeah, you're ahead of me, but you're faking the funk. You're not really even telling people what you're thinking. You're saying what you think they want to hear.
They're ahead of you the way a shoe salesman is ahead of you before you get your first job.
Yes.
You're like, all right, you're ahead, but I'll never want to be that.
Yeah, yeah. It was so much talk of clean it up, clean this up.
Dice told me this once when he was like, "So what do you want to do?" He took me aside one day in the kitchen of the Comedy Store. I'm like, "You know, stand up." He goes, "Well, what's your goal?" I mean, you want to do like theaters or clubs or what do you want to do? He's like, "I want to sell out clubs. That'd be my goal." He goes, "And that's it?" He goes, "I mean, I can't do like stadiums like you did." And he just goes, "Huh, why?" And I'm like, "I don't know. I mean, you just can't." And he was like, "Well, why?" And I'm like, "I don't know, because that's very rare." And he goes, "Man, you can."
Yeah, he's right. He's right. You can. I mean, it might not ever happen, but you can.
Anyone can.
What is that? It's like, if 100 people like you, or 1,000 people like you, you could see 1,000 people liking you after last night.
Yeah.
Like, think of the gig we did. We did 1,600 people in D.C. You killed.
So many.
You killed in front of 1,600 people. So you could see those 1,600 people returning and seeing you, couldn't you?
You could see some of them, definitely.
Yeah, why not? So if 1,000.
The more you do that, the more it would get, yeah.
So if you could see 1,000 people coming to see you that enjoyed you, and they said, "Oh, Ari Shaffir's back. We loved him when he was here with Joe Rogan.
Why not 10 of those?
Let's go see him again." Why not 10,000?
Yeah.
Why not 20,000? Really, it's across the whole country, you could easily have 20,000. It's a matter of 20,000 being aware of you in Detroit, 20,000 be aware of you in Philadelphia to fill a place. And the crazy thing is, it's what's going to get you there is not some movie or some TV special. It's this.
This stuff right here.
It's podcasts, yeah, because this is the only thing. There's never been a thing that lets people know really exactly who you are. It was always like you get 5 minutes of this asshole on the Tonight Show, and you hope you kind of get a reasonable, or
maybe
radio.
I get interviewed at the desk for 3 minutes.
Yeah, yeah,
that's your hope.
Opie and Anthony or Howard Stern or one of those was the closest. You know, you sat down with those guys and shot the shit, and you know, Howard gets deep into your personal life and your sexual life, and Opie and Anthony will let you rant about shit and go off. So that was like the best representation of who you are, but this is even better than that, because this is all you, and it's for hours and hours of it, and it's all free and it's all readily available.
Well, hi, new fans. If you're listening.
What's that?
I said hi, new fans.
Yeah, hi, new fans. You fucking freaks. What are you doing? Put your pants on.
DC was fun. That was a fun, good
DC
show.
DC was awesome, man. These gigs have been so much more fun lately. This past year, all the gigs we've been doing on the road have been really just really packed crowds that know exactly what we're doing, and they're all podcast fans. So you mentioned the podcast, they went crazy. I mentioned the Fleshlight on Friday night, and they went crazy. Ugh. Just because they know that it's the sponsor, they went crazy.
How do you feel being responsible for a number of loads across the country?
I think it's funny.
I would say a myriad. I would use that here.
I like the Fleshlight being my sponsor because it's perfect, because it's embarrassing, it's silly, but it's functional, and there's no reason to be embarrassed. And it's like, pretend that you don't masturbate, I think, is just as stupid this rubber vagina.
Everybody pretends about everything.
Stupid.
It's like, why are you pretending?
Because of censorship.
Here's what I'm realizing. It's, you know how when somebody breaks up, when you have a friend who breaks up with somebody, and immediately they're like, "Yeah, whatever, I'm fine, I don't care." And it's like, why doesn't somebody just say, like, "Oh, no, you're not. None of us ever are after we break up. It's okay to feel pain for a while."
Because, you know, you say you're fine because you want to be fine.
No.
You know, and you are kind of fine.
You don't
want
to show weakness in front of people.
There's a little of that. But it's also that you want, you know, you think that if you put yourself in the right state of mind, you know, maybe you will be okay. Yeah, I'll be okay. I'm fine. But, you know, you could be self-indulgent and go, "Oh, my life is over." Yeah. I would way rather hear "I'm fine" than someone, like, stick their chin up.
Even when you're talking to exes, too, and they're like, how you doing? You're all right? I told somebody this once, and I was like, it's okay to be like, you know, it's still really hard, but, you know, I'll get better eventually. You don't have to be like, yeah, I don't care at all.
Yeah, but people always feel like they have to say that.
Yeah.
You know, they always feel like they have to say that. Even if they're just trying to convince themselves.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is.
It's because we're all weak bitches. That's what it is.
The TV they have on now is just so horrible.
You know, a big part of what people do and who people are is projecting and pretending to be something that you're not, you know?
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's the entire art of rap music.
It's way easier just to, like,
be yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's hard. It's hard to admit in reality. It's hard to face reality, you know?
Yeah. Well, like, you can, like, you know how sometimes you almost trip over, like, a curb or something, and you pretend, like, you immediately pretend like you don't?
I fell down stage the other night.
Fell on stage?
I fell down.
And what do you mean?
I slipped.
Were you drunk?
No, I was doing this crazy thing, and the stool fell over. I was doing this thing about, you know, the weird contact rules with strip clubs. You know, that bit?
I like that bit.
And I fell. And then
you just felt like you fell to the ground?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I when I was down there, I said, am I supposed to do this like a boss? And I like put, you know, because like there's a bunch of internet memes of people falling down and putting their knuckles on their chin. Like, I meant to do that.
Pretending like you're fine.
Yeah, but, you know, it's part of life, you know?
I love those fuck-ups on stage.
Yeah.
Or if you smash your face with a microphone as you're pulling it out of the stand. Do you ever do that?
Yeah, I've hurt my lip before.
Yeah, it always hurts. You pull it, it's like hard right onto your lip, and it hurt, like shoves it between the teeth and the thing.
Yeah. One time I was doing the K-Rock special.
Yeah.
They were at that April Fool's special. It's 7,000 people.
Wow.
It's a huge place.
Is that the biggest show you've done?
Yeah, definitely. Wow. And I was killing it. I was going crazy while I was on stage, and I whacked my hand down on the stool. Somehow or another, I did this. I don't know what I was trying to accomplish, but I cracked my hand, and I went, ooh, I think I just broke my hand. And I was pretty convinced for the first minute or so that I broke my hand, but I had to just keep going through my material. My hand was bleeding, so I had to...
bleeding?
My knuckle was bleeding, yeah. I smashed it, dude. I mean, I really cracked it hard, and it was some pretty intense pain. I was like, wow, that's an injury. That's not a...
I'll punch the stool sometimes, but I usually slap at it.
That's a smart move.
But at the Comedy Store, they have those really padded... stools.
Cushiony, yeah.
So everyone's like, I'll really punch at it.
Right.
And that's fine.
Right.
But then you go somewhere else and you forget and you punch this thing and you're like, ow, my knuckle. It's always inflamed now. This knuckle. I do it once every like month or two. And I'm like, what an asshole I am.
You could just turn that into a hammer fist.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
Then you'd be fine every time.
I could do that totally. But fuck up for no reason whatsoever. The shows are getting way bigger, man.
Yeah, they're getting bigger for sure. It's a big difference between this and a couple years ago, where we had to struggle to fill much smaller places.
Can I mention where they offered you in Vegas, that one room?
Yeah, you can mention that. Sure.
You're thinking of doing it. We don't know yet, but the Pearl.
Yeah.
And I remember that's one of those things that, like, 3 years ago, we're in Vegas taking the elevator up, and we saw Lisa Lampanelli's playing the Pearl.
Yeah.
It's a giant room in the round, almost.
Yeah.
And we're like, how the fuck? That's gigantic.
Yeah.
And now you're doing that.
Yeah, kind of weird. Yeah, it wasn't that long ago either. Well, we've been doing the Mandalay Bay Theater, which is fucking huge too, which would have freaked me out. You know, that's 1,800 people.
That's where they show The Lion King.
Yeah, yeah, we've done that a couple times now. Three, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're trying to get us to do that again in October.
Two, I think.
Two?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great room. It's a lot of fun. It's way
I really
better
want
than
to go there next day and watch The Lion King.
Yeah, we should do that.
Yeah.
Totally. We could probably do that too.
They invited us. They're like, whenever you want,
watch
it. I think those things in Vegas is what I've heard, those big shows that are like $250 a ticket or whatever, they don't ever really sell out, so those are the things they comp to like high rollers.
Oh, really?
They're like, no skin off our teeth. Yeah, it's a $250 ticket, we're not selling it anyway, so if you want, it's like rooms. They're like, the rooms we already have, so who cares, take it. Take the presidential suite, no one's in there.
I've only been to see a couple other people's shows in Vegas. I went to see Artie Lang in Vegas once, and it was like half sold.
Really?
Yeah, that was one of the shows where I went to, I was like, wow, like this might be a trap, you know, like being on the Stern Show and then going on the road and doing stand-up, because I had never been to a show where I saw a guy get heckled more than Artie Lang in Vegas.
Really?
He was at the Luxor. Oh, fuck, they wouldn't leave him alone, man. It was half full. This is a few years ago. I know his popularity kicked up. This is when they first got on the satellite radio. It's pre-suicide attempts.
Okay.
You know, it's just, I would say 5 or 6 years ago. And, you know, he had a good crowd in there. It was bigger than a place that I could do. So it's like, you know, part of me was like, wow, Artie's doing well. He's doing these really big places. But the other part of me was like, oh, Christ, this fucking audience is horrible.
Yeah.
They were horrible, man. They were just drunk and dumb as fuck. And you know, and Artie, like, had to talk about the show. If he didn't talk about the show, he couldn't just talk about life or anything in the news.
They were like, say something about Robin.
Yeah, what about Benji? You know, they would yell shit out. And then the Reverend Al, Reverend
Al
Bob Levy.
Oh.
Al Sharpton.
That'd be great. He opened?
Yeah, he opened. He did a tight five about his hair.
You guys are all ruining America.
Reverend Bob Levy, my pal from New York from the old days. He's a great guy. And Bob Levy has done every shithole on the East Coast. And he really knows how to handle hecklers. And so he fucking attacked and destroyed. And he would do this bit where we'd close his act by eating a girl's asshole, he would put like either like salad dressing on a girl's asshole.
Oh,
or
for real?
Oh, yeah, for real.
Jeans,
for inside. Real. Oh, yeah. He'd pull her pants down and eat her asshole.
Jesus.
Yeah. It was, that was like his closing bit.
And you, that which, must be impossible to follow.
Really hard to follow in a hell room.
Yeah, at a bar. That's the exact type of place.
Yeah, you can't believe he actually eats a girl's ass, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, but, you know, that's what you got to... You got to do what you got to do to survive when you're doing those East Coast hell gigs. You know, E. coli, E. schmoli, get in there.
You put salad dressing on it?
Whatever, you put mayonnaise on it, whipped cream.
Like tossing a salad.
There's a lot of different stories of different things that he would put on it.
I would like to see that, but I would not want to go on afterwards.
Yeah, so then, you know, Artie's got to go on after that. And Nick DiPaolo went up that night, too. Nick DiPaolo killed, too.
Yeah.
And so Artie has to go on after all this and just... They were happy to see him, but they were just so hammered. And we were beside these guys. Joey Diaz was there with me. Yeah. We were beside these guys, and they were heckling Artie, and they were saying, "No, you're supposed to do this, man. They like it when you do this." They were just stupid and sloshed.
Drunks are, you cannot communicate with them.
Oh. Yeah,
I've tried before. I've tried to really calmly say, like, "No, it's okay, you're just drunk." But you know how you're too drunk sometimes? People get like that?
Yeah.
That's what you are. So maybe take a cab home.
Well, you saw that guy, the drunk guy that came up to the stage on Friday night.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I peeked out to see him. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was telling his friends, like, who are you with? And I looked over his friends. I go, "You guys are going to have to make some decisions in your future. You know that this is going to happen over and over again, this fuck. You gotta decide. Sometimes there's people in your life. And you got to cut them loose, man. You got to figure out when
to." He came all the way to the stage, and he's like, and you were like, "Okay, make this clear. What do you want to say?" Remember what he asked you?
Yeah, look at that. There's a UFC on the fucking plane.
Oh, wow, yeah. They're showing
us. I have never seen that before. We're riding on the plane, and they had UFC fighters working out.
Is it a commercial for the UFC trainer?
Oh, it's a commercial for a UFC video game.
The X Play.
Oh, it's the trainer game. It's the UFC trainer with that Xbox Kinect.
What was that, Brian Stan?
You know what Xbox Kinect is?
No. Is that like the Wii?
It's amazing. It sees your movements, and the video game character emulates your movements.
Oh.
Yeah, it just sees your body.
Oh, but instead of being plugged in everything, you're not?
Yeah. You don't have to have anything on. You're just moving, and as you move in front of this thing,
yeah.
I think it's kind of crude for right now. You know.
So can't they do all the stuff they do on the Wii with that?
Yeah, well, yeah, Xbox is more comprehensive than the Wii, because it's your whole body.
Yeah.
It's not just moving the handle around. It literally sees your body, and if you look at the video, it's like mimicking
Greg
what
Jackson.
You're doing. It's through, you throw punches, it throws punches, see?
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Oh, so showing you can't just bowl from your chair.
Showing people to throw takedowns and leg kicks and stuff, it's pretty nuts.
So just to lose weight, is that the point?
Well, just to get in shape.
Yeah. Is that Diego?
Yeah, it's fascinating, man. It's fascinating stuff. The new technology for video games.
God, they see your movements.
Yeah, it sees your body frame, and it mimics your movements.
Because remember when they did all that stuff for, like, Gollum? And they had to... Did you ever see the behind the scenes on that?
Uh-huh.
And
they had to,
like,
those
put
suits.
Wires all over, all over him so they get every angle.
That's way better than this, though. This is not does not move with the same type of accuracy that does.
But this is a version of that, though, right? But without
sort
the stuff.
Yeah, the same kind of thing. It's motion
this
detection.
This is going to get better, I guess.
I did the THQ game. You know, I'm in that game... The UFC video game.
Uh-huh.
And in the UFC video game, they had to take images of me and all the other people that are involved in this sport, Goldberg and Bruce Buffer, and you stand still, and they take a 360-degree photo of you.
Oh,
and
really?
And then they add that into an animation program, and then it moves you around.
We did that at South by Southwest. They had, like, one of these booths. It was a car commercial. All four of us, like, would jump, and they would take it would do the zoom around you.
Uh-huh.
It was just really cool.
Oh, wow.
Those pictures.
Yeah, this is amazing, man.
It's amazing. Of people in the air.
Kind of technology. I mean, you ever seen those 3D phones now? A bunch of people had them at the show the other night.
Oh,
they were
yeah.
taking 3D pictures of us.
You saw it?
Yeah.
What did it look like?
Shit.
Oh.
Looks terrible.
It's new.
Yeah, but it's new. Yeah, it's on the way, you know?
Just wait. Oh, Terry Fader. Is that his name, Terry Fader?
I think so.
God,
yeah,
I wonder if that's good. That's another thing I should see. Those shitty acts that I've made fun of, but I'm like, I've never even seen it. I should probably just see it.
Oh, it's torturous.
I didn't mind Jeff Dunham.
Oh,
when I was
good.
Little, I watched that, and I was like, that guy made me laugh. Peanut made me laugh.
Yeah, he's
when
a
I was
smart
little,
guy. I've heard him on Opie and Anthony. He's a very smart guy. He's interesting. You know, he makes his own dolls and makes his own...
he makes them all?
Yeah, with a 3D printer. He makes them with a 3D printer.
What do you mean?
Well, he's got a 3D printer that makes things out of plastic. You know, they have printers now that print in three dimensions. Instead of just an image, they can actually print an object.
Really?
Yeah, well, it's the future of materialism, really, because you're going to be able to have the components for things, and what you're going to buy is you're going to buy the schematics for things. And, you know, obviously people are going to buy them or download them from torrent sites. You're going to be able to just steal the schematics for things. And all you're going to need is the raw materials. Like, think of certain plastic things. Like, say, how about a plastic garden shovel?
Okay, let's say a shovel. Sure.
How hard is it to make a plastic garden shovel if you actually have something that can print out plastic into any form you want? It's a pretty simple form.
Well, so you'll it comes be able out of the to, printer and,
yeah,
like...
You'll be able to get, say if you buy a printer, you'll be able to get the schematics for a plastic garden shovel, and you'll be able to enter them into the computer, and then it'll run, the machine runs in layers, and there's a bunch of different ways to do it. One of them is a powder, and the powder, they add like a quickening agent to it, and it hardens, and the other one is, the other one is a spool of line that's very similar to... like fishing line, and it's heated at about 500 degrees, and as it's heated, it melts and settles into the other layers of lines. So as you're putting it down, it becomes soft, and then the other one lays on top of it, and that becomes soft, and it becomes one solid piece.
Wow.
That's amazing, really.
Jesus. Wow, I never considered that. Pretty done. You get nervous for the UFCs at all?
No.
You don't care at all? Do you feel any pressure?
I care. No, I definitely feel...
care is the wrong word.
I get amped up.
Yeah.
But I don't feel nervous. I don't feel like, oh boy, this is it. A million plus people are watching. Holy shit. I always just think about the task. I'm so comfortable doing it.
You've done it so many times.
Long. Yeah.
You get nervous on stage at all?
No, I get amped up.
When you taped your special that time in Columbus, you got nervous?
I got nervous then, yeah. The first set, I got nervous.
I saw you pacing beforehand. I was like, I don't normally see you like this.
It was also to get Eddie Bravo to stop telling me stories. it was so strange. He was telling me stories like right before I was going on stage.
Really?
You know, sometimes people forget you're about to do something.
Moment, yeah.
It's going to freak you out, you know. But that was the last time I've actually been nervous. But I was only nervous for the first show.
Yeah, second show, you rocked it.
Yeah, hard. Once I had it out in the can, the second show was just like any normal show. I was like, oh, great. This is... Because once I knew I had it in the can, I was like, okay, now I can relax. And then the second show was just a show.
Yeah.
And the first show was only a first show up until the Q&A. Once I got to the Q&A was super relaxed.
Super relaxed?
Yeah, it was fine, you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, once you're doing any sort of task for a while...
Yeah.
I try to explain this to the comics when they ask me, like, how to not get nervous. Normally, when people give me advice, I'm like... Literally, they ask for advice. I mean, I'm like, you got to find out. Like, I can't tell you.
Yeah.
You got to figure it out.
You
got to
do it, and you got to get good at it. And, you know, you're going to be nervous if the result oftentimes is horrendous.
Yeah.
If you go on stage and you bomb and people hate you, that sucks. And you're going to be nervous
but
that that's going to happen.
You have to keep doing it until you get better at that situation.
And that's like, the hardest part about being a beginner is you're going to bomb a lot, man. Think about how many times you bombed early in your comedy career where it was devastating to your psyche.
Oh, terrible. I wanted to have sex with this girl, Kim, my friend Stephen Trace's friend. And it was one of those where you both like each other and you both know it, but it just hasn't worked out yet. She has a boyfriend, I have a girlfriend, whatever it is. And then one time she didn't, and she came to see me at some place on Melrose or Beverly. Brett Ernst is performing and Renazis is performing, and she was there. And I bombed so hard.
Ooh.
And I had to stay. To leave, you had to walk through the showroom, through where everybody was. And I think I went on early, and I sat there through the whole show. In the back, because I didn't want to face anybody. I let them all leave.
Ugh.
They didn't want to see her, and we never had sex.
Now
she has kids, and she's married.
Whoa.
It's done forever.
Wow.
We never did it.
I say you got off light.
She was cool. We're still friends. there's something you told me once, that I remember this. When I was I was fucking with all these Italians came in, and they sat in the side of the comedy store, you know, all the booths are.
Yeah.
And as soon as they walked in with their fucking backwards hats, I could just tell, like, oh, these are just Guidos. Fuck you. I could just tell immediately. And the first thing they said, they were like, they were sat there and they're like, oh, yeah. Just something like a little douchey, and I just went off on them. And I lost the crowd. They all thought it was just, like, uncalled for. And you said later, you're like, you know, because I was like, what is it? I went off and everybody turned on me. You're like, you're very sensitive because you're a comic, like we all are, and you can immediately tell they're all douchey. The crowd is slower. You got to let them, let the crowd figure out their douchey first, then you can attack them.
Yeah, you got to give them rope.
Let them hang themselves. Yeah, that's what you said, give them rope. And then I remember taking like a year before I could actually figure out how to do that in practice. And then knowing and letting somebody hang themselves over and over. And then finally just going like, shut up. And everyone cheers. And you're like, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I have you on my side against these people.
In a movie, when the hero meets the enemy, the hero never kills the enemy right away. Because you got to see drama play out. Something's going to happen.
Yeah.
There's got to be a reason to kill the enemy. You can't say, you know, well, this guy's a bad guy and he's the good guy, so he's going to get him, then he shoots him, he's dead.
Oh, yeah.
It's a 2-minute movie.
You can't kill the enemy unless you're in, or someone else in complete danger right now. They have to be picking up their gun at the end.
You have to, first of all, have the audience on your side. So you have to say something funny first. You have to get the audience convinced that you have some entertainment for them and that these douchebags are keeping it from the audience with their selfishness.
By the way, it's the same thing Spider-Man does before he kills an enemy.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, he makes some quip, some joke. Oh. But go ahead, keep going.
Well, that's what you gotta
I like
do.
That.
And then, you know, you got to build it up so drama's taking place where the audience doesn't know what the hell's going to happen. You know, these people are heckling, and is the comic flustered? Is the comic upset? How's the comic going to deal with this? You know, and you got to be kind at first, and then, you know, it's like Dalton in Roadhouse. You got to be nice until it's time to not be nice.
Is that a saying?
Yeah. It's one of the worst movies ever.
That sounds like a rough draft.
Oh, it's perfect. A line.
That doesn't sound like a real line.
Those are the cocaine days. Well, they made movies, they're all cooked up. They made ridiculous movies that were real movies.
That's so bad. That's a stupid line.
Oh, it's the best. Oh, that's not as bad as when she's stitching him up in the hospital. This really hot nurse is stitching up Patrick Swayze.
Yeah.
And he goes, pain don't hurt. He said, pain don't hurt.
Pain don't hurt.
Pain don't hurt,
I haven't seen the movie in a long time.
Oh, it's awesome. He's a philosopher / cigarette smoking badass.
Really?
Yeah, he's cool in every way with perfect hair.
Have you ever seen Point Break? Have you ever seen Point Break live?
I've seen live. What do you mean?
These guys it's called Point Break Live. I think they do it on the road now, but they did it in like I think in Los Feliz or downtown or something in LA for like a few years. They reenact Point Break.
Oh no!
And they play all the roles except Keanu Reeves, who they pick out from the audience. And they have like Keanu Reeves off at the beginning of it, and then they pretty much I think all his lines are whoa or whatever, and they keep calling on him. It's supposed to be amazing.
Oh, that's
and
hilarious.
So much fun.
That sounds
And they do it all in, like, I don't know how long it takes to reenact it, and everybody's drunk.
I went to see Rocky Horror Picture Show once.
Recently? Or a long time ago?
No, a long
time ago.
It's still rocking, though. There's still places that have it.
I was
still
amazed by it. When I went in college, I was like, wait, what do these people do? They all know the lines.
They're dressed up.
And there's a separate script for them to say along with it.
Yeah. It's a party. And the crazy thing is, you know, some of them have seen it 50 times.
Yeah.
Some of them have seen it 100 times. It's crazy. And it's they just keep going.
It's the nerd saying, like, we're not going to be left out. We have social things, too.
It's also, you know, they it becomes a thing for them to do. They obsess on it. And I don't understand it. You know, I mean, I went to see Star Wars a gang of times when I was a kid.
Yeah.
When I was a little kid, going to see Star Wars.
You can see movies more than once.
Yeah, you're
supposed
to. You
see it seven times.
Well, there's no VHSs back then. You had to go see movies in the movie.
Oh, yeah, and that was your only chance.
Yeah.
Can you imagine now, if I see a movie twice in the theater, that's something I'm telling everybody about.
Yeah. I saw Avatar 3 times.
Really?
Yeah. I fucking loved Avatar. That was a great movie.
I saw it once with Brian. We were so high that we, like, didn't... We bought our ticket, like, an hour ahead of time at Universal, and they were like, let's wander around while we're high, and we're like, let's not wander too far. So we stayed really close to the theater.
Scared. Yeah. Walk around in circles.
Losing track of time. Oh, the movie's starting. Nope, it's only been a minute. Okay, we're still good.
Yeah, that was a fun movie. That's my kind of movie. I like to
Avatar.
See big escape movies.
Whenever people tell me about the problems with that movie, I'm always, you know, like plot-wise, I'm always like, yeah, you're right. Didn't notice at the time, but you're absolutely right. Yeah, that should have annoyed me.
Of course, it's a movie.
It
they had to wrap
so
it up in 90 minutes. If you want to have a movie that's completely realistic and... You know, and doesn't conform to any of the standards of films. It either might suck, might leave you hanging, or it might last 6 hours. You know?
Yeah.
I'm not willing to have either one of those.
You ever see In
happen.
The Bedroom?
What's that?
You ever see In the Bedroom?
In the Bedroom. What is that?
It's not like a romantic movie. It's really sad. It had not Tia Leone. Who's the girl from My Cousin Vinny?
I don't know.
She's a chick. She dated George Costanza in Seinfeld for a while.
I never really watched Seinfeld.
You didn't see My Cousin Vinny?
No. Oh, Marissa Tomei.
Marissa Tomei, yeah. Okay. She was in it. A bunch of people, but it was about somebody's son dying.
Okay.
I remember seeing that the same year that A Beautiful Mind won the Oscar and getting mad. But like, wait, that other movie was actually a good movie. It didn't bother me in any way.
Beautiful Mind bothered you?
No. Beautiful Mind. Not a, oh, yeah, it did, totally.
Why did it bother you?
Well, because the final... You see that movie?
Yeah.
You know how he wins this Nobel Prize and he overcomes everything and yes. everyone claps? He won the Nobel Prize for something he did when he was a freshman.
When he was sane.
So all that craziness and overcoming that didn't help him win the Nobel Prize. Everyone clapping at the end and standing up when there's a score, it made me cry, but there was nothing there. He didn't overcome.
Well, he did because he was socially competent again. He was able to communicate with people.
He was able to say thank you.
Yeah, it's a bit, that's an interesting thing about madness. You know, the idea of madness. I like that movie because, first of all, it's based on a true story. And as much of it is horseshit.
Except the stuff they changed is his wife left him immediately when she went crazy.
Oh, did she?
Yeah, she didn't stick by him in any way. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Nice.
Oh. Not Hollywood enough. Let's change that because it's too depressing.
That bitch. Yeah. Well,
that's more realistic.
Yeah, I find madness and great skill to be very closely related. You know, great skill and great awareness. People that are really genius, brilliant people, are almost always really close to being crazy. You know, I mean, we've seen it in comics and actors and musicians and writers and, you know, people who are like, you know, people who are capable of like really amazing things and really...
I have a theory
that
you can't tell how crazy they are until they stop being as famous because you forgive them. For instance, case in point, Clock Around Your Neck, Flavor Flav. When he was a musician actually putting stuff out, you're like, oh, whatever. But now you're like, oh, you're like a crack addict.
Right.
You're like, you're beyond crazy. Same thing with his girlfriend, who you thought, oh, normal. Now you're like, oh, you're just some dumb blonde.
His girlfriend?
The girlfriend on that show when he had that reality show.
I never saw that
tall
show.
Blonde girl that was in like...
I never saw that whatever. Show, but I thought he was always the comic relief on that band.
From NWA.
But yeah, it was Public Enemy. But
that's
it was definitely exaggerated once Public Enemy was sort of out of the spotlight as a band, and he was sort of in the spotlight as a freak show. But yeah. I mean, I think he was kind of forced into that role too to make a living. You know.
Oh.
Our initial approach, bitches.
So bright.
There it is. We look down.
It got cold in DC.
Yeah, it was a
little
chilly.
It was October 1st, and it was chilly.
Well, that's what happens in October in the East Coast, fella. You know, we don't realize it. We're in the land of no weather.
It's so great.
Yeah.
I saw all those pictures. Last year was a really bad blizzard year for the Midwest.
Yeah.
The blankets. I see these pictures of blankets of white. I'm like, yeah, we had a low of 52.
Yeah.
It's just so much more pleasant.
Well.
As an experience.
When in the my winter's my favorite time in L.A. because it rains. Oh. I like when it rains and everything gets green, man. I think that's awesome. Yeah.
It's the only time right after a rain, you can see from the comic store all the way downtown.
Yeah.
Because the smog is all gone.
And you can see the mountains. You know, you can see the San Gabriel Mountains where Big Bear is and everything like that.
Really?
You can see that from my house. It's crazy.
Really?
You see the snow on them in the winter. Yeah, it's gorgeous. We're you know, breathing shit air all the time. It's one of the reasons why I wanted to move to Colorado in the first place. I think ultimately that shit's got to fuck with you. You know, a little bit of cigarettes. Yeah. Look. You could smoke a half a cigarette a day and probably be okay.
You're fine,
but
yeah.
Wouldn't you be better if you didn't smoke a half a cigarette a day? Wouldn't you be healthier? That's how I always feel about L.A.'s air. I mean, that's why I live as far out as I do.
Have you ever heard the population explosion and the population bomb?
What is it, a book?
There are two books. The population bomb was written by these scientists. I don't know what kind. Something to do with populations. Him and his wife. About the coming problem of population. Because it's growing... geometrically instead of whatever the other one is that I remember.
You
when
mean
I was
exponentially?
High school. Exponentially instead of geometrically. And I've still probably got the terms wrong. But they were like, it's going to be a major problem very soon. And then 30 years later, they wrote it called The Explosion. It's like, it's out of control. But their theory was like, they said things like, let's say you took a drop of motor oil and put it in a creek once a day. That creek could evaporate that motor oil. And you could do it till the end of time. It would never overwhelm the creek. But if you dump barrels in there for a few days... that creek is done forever.
Mm.
Even though it'd be the same amount, but just like in L.A. where it's like, it's what you're saying, pretty much, like it's too much smog.
You know, McKenna...
like your body can deal with half a cigarette. McKenna
had a mushroom trip once where he said,
Sounds
he
awesome.
Asked the mushrooms, how can we fix humanity? and the mushroom said, every couple should only reproduce once. Every couple should only have one child.
Really?
Yeah.
When was that? What year was that?
Well, he had it. The trip was probably in the 80s. Because he was talking about it in the 90s. But that was what the mushrooms told him. That I mean, really, it's brilliant if you think about it. It really is the solution to humanity. A big part of our problems is overpopulation. Yeah. And it would dwindle, cut everything back 50% without any need for a war or a nuclear explosion or a meteor to do it, you know?
Disease.
Yeah.
Disease is nature's way of keeping population down.
No one's going to do that in third world countries. No one's going to do that in first world countries. People are selfish. They want what they want. And, you know, they're sort of trying to implement something like that in China.
What, you know, major taxes to get one baby per family?
Yeah, well, you're only allowed to have one child in China. You know, and that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to cut their population back. And if you do engineer it that way, over the course of, you know, say, a couple generations, once old people die off, things will be more manageable. I mean,
well, if
really
you have a field, this is what they said in that book, too, or one of the two books. If you have a field, and the only reason I know about these books, by the way, is I had a report due, I think, in, like, seventh grade, and I copied it from a across-the-street neighbor. He just gave me his, and he did it on that book. So then I later read the sequel and actually wrote a report of my own. I copied it exactly. Mrs. Scales didn't know the difference at all.
Oh, that's funny.
Just 3 years later.
You can't do that anymore because now people put things online and they could just do a plagiarism program.
I had a friend,
Jonathan
Wilbur. He's my brother-in-law's brother. And he copied straight from Cliff Notes some book. And the teacher's like, you copied this. You plagiarized. And he's like, no, I didn't. And she goes, look, this whole paragraph is word for word. And he goes, nope. Wasn't me. And she was like, ugh, you're such an... And she just forgot about it.
Wow.
Fucking bratty kid. Fine.
Well, you know, there's all sorts of programs now to see if someone's been plagiarizing your blogs. I've had people plagiarize my blogs word for word.
Really?
Yeah, completely and entirely.
Like students and stuff?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't
students and people that just write shitty websites.
Oh.
You know, there's a lot of people that have, like,
that
shitty comedy variety websites. And something will happen in the news, and I'll write a whole blog about it, and they'll take literally everything that I wrote that's funny and put it in their blog, and then you catch them. I've caught a bunch of people doing that.
Really? Well, that sucks.
It's super common. But, you know, it's also people that have, you know, gone through high school stealing, gone through college plagiarizing, and they haven't gotten caught, and so they think they're smart.
It's also like, in high school, I sort of understand it. Maybe it's only because I did it so much, but it's like, hey, I don't care. I don't want credit for this. I just want to get the report done.
Right. You just want to get through it.
I don't want anybody to know I wrote this stuff. It's just...
You're not trying to pretend that you're a brilliant writer.
Yeah.
You're just trying to
work. I'm just trying to get a B.
Yeah.
They had but they said in that book too that they said if I work a field, I can get, let's say, 20% fielded out of the field, you know. If I ask you to help me, I can get 40 or 50%. And if I ask a third person, I get 80%. At some point, adding another person stops giving another full person's growth. You know what I mean? So if we get 10 people working, if we had an 11th, we could only go up like 1-2% more.
Yeah, there's that old expression, one boy, whole boy, two boy, half boy, three boys, no boy at all.
At some point, population overwhelms the ability to produce food for its people.
Well, especially since most people aren't producing food. I mean, with LA is a population of, what, 20 million people in the outlying areas?
Something like
How
that.
Many of those people are actually growing food?
Well, I made pickles last week, so...
Oh, there you go.
I'm part of the
Did
solution.
You grow the pickles?
That's a negative.
No. So think about how many people that need food. 20 million people need food every single day, and none of them are growing anything other than weed. It's the only thing that's getting grown. It's true. Everyone's going, weed. You go over to dude's houses, dude, I'm growing. They're growing. They say they're growing, but they don't say they're growing tomatoes. When a guy tells you he's a grower, you know, the fuck, he's not. He doesn't have celery in his yard.
Yeah.
You know?
You're absolutely right.
It's totally true.
I'm amazed at how great horticulturalists those potheads are.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Become scientific about it.
What's also amazing is how few people eat vegetables. You know, because we don't, if everybody ate like I eat, you know, we would need a lot more goddamn farmers. We would need vegetables everywhere. There would be a shortage of vegetables everywhere. But whenever I go to the grocery store, there's plenty of vegetables, and nobody's even touching them.
No.
You go near them, there's no one anywhere near.
I'm not even walking that aisle.
The ice cream aisle is packed with people. People are getting milk, and they're getting
meat. I sometimes
meat.
Grab one pepper to sneak into my salad.
Really?
Because they don't have hot peppers there, so I just have to grab one and throw it in there.
Well, I have this kale drink that I drink every morning. It's a smoothie. Yeah. It doesn't taste very good. It tastes okay. It's not intolerable.
Do you nickname it Kale Shunnin?
Kale Shunnin?
Yeah.
No.
No. Sunnin? Whatever. Horrible, horrible joke.
Chael,
go ahead.
Chael Sonnen. That's his name, right? Chael?
Yeah, Chael. No, you can't say
it. You got me confused.
You heard it wrong. Chael. You're like, wait, now I don't know.
All right, I'm here with Chael Sonnen. My name's Chael Joe. Oh, sorry.
Oh, well, I have a smoothie drink I make called Chael Sonnen, so yeah. You see my mistake. Anyway, tell us about your victory.
I drink this kale shake every morning, and it's really healthy for you. It's super delicious, and it makes me feel very good when I do it on a regular basis. What's that?
Most people don't have kale shake makers.
Well, it's just a blender.
Oh.
It just smashes everything up into like a smoothie. It's a super potent blender.
Is it good?
Yeah, it's really good for you. But I was thinking, man, if everybody did that, how many fucking vegetables would we need?
That palm stuff?
Huh?
You ever drink that palm stuff?
Palm's good, yeah.
Oh my god, I drink good it stuff. And I'm like, energy.
Yeah.
I've got such a deficit of nutrients.
Yeah, you do.
So when I drink it, I'm like, this is way better for me than candy.
Well, you should juice. You know, juicing fruit and vegetable juice is super healthy for you and really easy to do.
I would have to get a juicer.
You got
to
clean it, though, you fucking dirty bastard.
Yeah.
You're a dirty bastard.
My next place, I'm getting a dishwasher.
Yeah, my next place, I'm going to clean
my next
one day.
That's why I say that. I've been in the same position 9 years. But I'm like, I'm not going to get a next place.
Yeah.
Like, relax.
Have you, I know for a while you were thinking about buying in L.A.
No more.
You give up on that?
Not completely, but...
Oh, they're telling us to put away electronics. Does that include podcasting equipment?
It probably doesn't include podcasting equipment.
No. Are you giving up on buying in L.A.?
Not completely, but like for now, yeah.
It's because the market is still not gotten any better. Well, it's so good for buying now because there's so many short sales. So many people are losing their place.
They've also said they're keeping the interest rates even till 2013. This is the first time they've actually set a date.
Wow.
Like, we're not, they say foreseeable future for a while, but now they've said till 2013. My friend Avi said 3 years ago when the recession was just starting, he was like, trust me, at worst, people are saying mid-2011 before the housing market even comes out. And everyone's like, that's ridiculous. It's still getting worse.
Yeah.
It's mid-2011 now.
Well, there's a lot of people that believe that it's only part of the problem because the commercial real estate problem hasn't really developed to the worst point. It's you know, there's a lot of commercial real estate available. Like you were telling me that you went and looked at an office space. You got an office space, right? Look how easy it is.
They wanted 500. I was like, I have my budget is 350. They're like, well, we can do 450. I'm like, no. My budget. I'm Jewish. I'm not going to sway from my budget. I know what a budget means, and it's 350. I totally understand if you can't rent this to me, but that's my maximum.
I think they're going to arrest us if we don't shut this off.
Let's put it on pause.
So here comes a nice lady.
Until we land.
All right. Well, this is it, folks.
Yeah, why not?
This is the end of our podcast.
Thanks for coming.
We had a good time.
We talked about censorship.
How long did we talk for?
15 minutes and 40
seconds. Perfect. Yeah. Perfect.
You have anything to promote?
Nope.
In case anybody hears us?
Listen to my podcast. It's the Joe Rogan Experience. It's on iTunes. It's on joerogan.net.
You can find all of the old ones there and all the...
And come to our shows.
All right, that's it. Ari Shaffir's Skeptic Tank, number 27. Plane ride? No. Censorship. Is that what I'm calling this? Censorship. In the books, yes, that's what it is. Thank you, Joe Rogan, for talking to me. That was fun. Thank you also for bringing me with you to Washington, D.C. That show was fun, and we always have fun trips together. My storyteller show is a few stand-up things. My storyteller show is called This Is Not Happening, Presents Scary Stories. It's this Thursday, October 20th. Paul Scheer from The League is doing it. Mike Bridenstine, Adam Hammer, the Walsh Brothers, who have heard their story, and it's really fucking funny. Matt Bronger from Mad TV, and I don't know. They're all from just fucking comedy and stuff. They're all funny. It's one of my favorite shows of the month. I do it about once a month, and it's one of my favorite shows. It's $5. It's at the Melrose Improv. It's just fun, so come on out. The 21st and 22nd, I'm in La Jolla at the San Diego Comedy Store with Freddie Lockhart from the Death Squad podcast called What's Good, and one of my podcasts, number whatever, I don't remember, but he's on there, and Tony Hinchcliffe, who I did Shroomfest with. It's all coming together, isn't it, San Diego, at the La Jolla Comedy Store, the 21st and 22nd. Go to thecomedystore.com for tickets to that. November 11th, I said this last time, but the improv is – I'm headlining the Melrose Improv, doing a longer set, so please come out to that. That's also improv.com. And what else? Oh, I'm taping my CD, my first and probably only CD I'm taping in Edmonton, Canada, Edmonton, Alberta, the comic strip, October 26th through the 30th, Halloween week, but not on Halloween. So go to thecomicstrip.ca for tickets to that. It should be really fun. I'm really excited to finally make something on tape. And that's it, everybody. Thank you very much for tuning in. Please subscribe so you get this all the time. But so far, so good. Every Monday, it's happening, huh? Surprising even myself. That's it. Ari Shaffir, Skeptic Tank number 27. Censorship. Hasta la vista. Dream about the days to come when I won't have to leave alone. About the times that I won't have